Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling. Well, you know, there's busy shows, and then there's, well, there's today. Chuck Todd, Eddie Olchek, Lori Lightfoot, the incoming mayor, Pat Brady, Newt Gingrich, Dean Richards, Howard Sudbury, Anna DeVlantis, Walter Jacobson, all on this show. How am I supposed to get all that in by 10? I mean, we'll be lucky if we get that in by 10 tomorrow.
We think you're capable. That's why we've given you this assignment.
Everybody gets 2 minutes. Not a second more. We'll start with the top six at six in just a second. Staff, any problems? Any issues? Everybody okay? Any personal life problems? No? Everybody good?
I've had to take I took a Benadryl this morning because I felt like I had a little bit of a runny nose. So I might be tired.
A Benadryl?
Why'd you take a Benadryl for a runny nose?
Well, because it...
You're going to pass out.
No, but it dries things up. That's why. Yeah. I take Flonase every single day of every...
But Benadryl doesn't
year.
Knock you out, right?
I mean, we'll see.
Oh, boy.
Well, let's stay tuned.
Well, this is going to be fun. So, like, about 8 o'clock, we're going to hear Mary go...
If I took a Benadryl right now, I'd be asleep by the time I finish this sentence.
I didn't sleep last night. We had there was an animal being attacked somewhere out down the street.
Oh, like a rat.
Was it screaming?
I think it was a pack of coyotes going to work.
Wow.
So,
have you ever heard a rabbit scream?
Yeah, I have.
It sounds like a little baby.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Could have been a rabbit.
Do you want a Benadryl?
No.
I mean, for tonight.
I won't need one. We're all having issues. I didn't sleep either. I had a radio nightmare. I hate those.
What was your radio nightmare?
Oh, I couldn't get back. I ran to the bathroom, and there were too many people in the bathroom. Couldn't get back to do a traffic report, and I was almost late.
Yeah, and you know how I would be with that if you were late.
Yeah, and then
the alarm
went off, and I was... freaking out.
You know, I still have nightmares about missing traffic and weather together on the 8s.
Yeah, those are radio nightmares. Yeah,
I have nightmares when I make the mistake of listening to traffic and weather on the 8s and they don't do it.
Right.
I used to do traffic and weather on the 1s.
We had it here. Traffic. Remember we did traffic and weather on the 7s for
the 7s?
For like 6 months?
Yeah.
Yeah.
MAQ, we did on the 1s. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, please. Traffic and weather, not a part of this. This is the top 6 at 6. Right now.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top 6 at 6. Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Item number one, guess what? More rain.
Woohoo!
More rain could be coming. We don't need any more. I've got to say no to this.
I don't think that you have control over that.
Skilling does.
Yeah, and Skilling has sort of spoken on this. A flash flood watch is going to go into effect in about an hour as more areas of heavy rain start moving across the area.
And Tom Skilling didn't give me anything for my birthday this year. How come I can't ask for no more rain, right? He just switches a flip on and flips a switch and turns on his weather machine, and then you're done. That's it.
I think he just knows what's going to happen. He doesn't actually control the weather.
This is outrageous development. Next. William Barr said he will not testify today, and maybe that's what he meant when now it's my baby. He's a big baby. William Barr will not testify today before the Democratic-controlled House Judiciary Committee, a day after a contentious Senate hearing in which he defended his handling of the special counsel investigation. I'm hoping you didn't take the time to watch this. We do have some sound to play for you later. He is an embarrassment and a hack, and really disappointing. Next, this college admission scandal has widened. More parents have been informed. They're under investigation in the nation's largest ever college admissions inquiry. There's an interesting story out of China. There's a Chinese family, parents, who paid $6.5 million to get their daughter into Stanford. They haven't been charged yet, in part because there's a belief that the language difference and the language difficulties may have led them to make a mistake, in which they didn't realize they were committing a crime.
They didn't realize they were paying $6.5 million?
Yeah. They just saw tuition went up a lot.
I have to tell you, Aunt Becky, she has become so unlikable. Her playing, pleading not guilty and saying because all parents help their kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And her and Massimo, they're...
Yeah, they're an embarrassment.
Yeah.
The only hope she has now is to get OJ's jury. I mean, you know, she got to get somebody who just is not willing to listen to any common sense and evidence and go from there. Next, Chicago announces electric scooter pilot program. West of Halsted Street, the city on Wednesday released details of a pilot program allowing electric scooter sharing in a large section of the northwest, southwest, and west sides, including diverse neighborhoods like Austin, Avondale, Pilsen, South Lawndale. But the Loop and communities along the lakefront would not be included, which is not a bad idea because we got enough traffic. We don't need scooters buzzing around over here.
That's right. And I don't know about all you guys, but when I saw this story, I thought video opportunity.
I don't understand how the security would work with this, because if I was a bad guy and I rented a scooter, why would I bring it back if I was a bad guy?
Well, and we have something to draw on. We have some experience to draw on here. If you look beyond the headlines at the Divvy bike system and how often those Divvy bikes get stolen, there's, a real good concern about this.
I don't know that, because I don't know that I've ever heard that story. So is it a regular thing? I mean, 10%, 2%? What do we know about Divvy bikes?
I don't know the exact data, but you know, there's a couple of accounts on Twitter that cover crime in Chicago, and they, you know, report on this all the time about Divvy bikes that end up in places where they're not supposed to be, and people riding them when they're obviously not paying for them. And so that's a, I don't know that it's a huge number, but it's certainly happening. And if it's, even if it's 1 or 2%, that's a lot of bikes.
Man, scooters are expensive.
Yeah. And also, these scooters, you're just going to be able to leave them in places. You're not, I don't think the way it works, they're not going to be docking stations like Divvy.
If you just leave them on the street?
Yeah, I think
somebody picks them up.
Yep.
In San Diego, they're all over the sidewalk. I mean, you kind of have to navigate around them.
Right? They just leave a scooter.
You leave it wherever you want to leave it.
Well, then who picks it up? The scooter people?
I think the next scooter user, they call them birds, I think, those scooters.
Yes.
So then, what is there, a credit card machine on the scooter?
Yeah, you do it through your app.
It's an app.
And so your app will tell you where the scooter is near you, and then you pay for it on your
credit
app.
Credit card machine. Like there's a slider on the scooter, Grandpa.
And do they have to be charged up or what?
No, they probably run on battery. Love. I don't know.
They're running. Electric. I mean, yeah. I don't know.
Next, James Holzhauser has now won 20 straight games on Jeopardy, and he's at $1.5 million plus. Again, we don't know how much longer this will go. We have some news on his brother and a little celebration that they're having out in Naperville. And this is this breaking news? I don't know if it's breaking news, but we'll announce that at some point. Do we announce that today?
No.
Oh, so I shouldn't even be talking about it, really, should I?
No.
So this party that's going on isn't really happening yet?
It is not.
Hmm. Did you tell me not to talk about this?
Definitely.
All right. Next. Alex Trebek sat down with Robin Roberts and talked about how chemo affects people in different ways. Of course, he's dealing with stage 4 pancreatic cancer. The full video is posted at WGNradio.com.
It's also at the Steve Cochran Show Facebook page.
And is it okay if I talk about that one?
Yes, you can talk about that one.
Okay, talk about that one? Okay. Alex Trebek's brother is having a party.
No, he's not. Oh. But you could hear Joe has a little bit of audio from the...
You have something you can play now?
Yep.
Oh, we'll play it then.
I go in and I sit down. I joke with the nurses and I'm there for an hour and a half while they inject all this stuff into me. And then I go home and I have a good day. And then the next day, for no reason that I can fathom, it turns south on me. But that's okay. You have to deal with it.
He talks about the depression and the waves of depression that have come in a very tough situation that he's in. The fact that he keeps going to work. You know, this James Holzhauer thing is kind of a blessing in disguise because it's brought all this new attention to the show, which helps bring attention to the fight with cancer and helps him raise money for pancreatic cancer fight. There's a lot of positives in what could be very negative, or is a very tough time for him.
And I thought the cutest thing he said in the interview is that he goes home and watches Jeopardy every single day like everybody else, and he's having so much fun watching James, you know, even though he was there and knows it, you know. It's just...
You know what surprised me? Do you know how many games Ken Jennings won in a row?
70-some.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, at some point, I would have thought Trebek just would have went, get out!
You know? I don't think it works that way.
Here's $20. Go rent a scooter in San Diego and get out of here. Because I thought like 20, because he's tied for second all time now, I thought 20 would be, well, he's got to be getting close to number one. He's got to do another month and a half plus.
But he's still going to blow away the money, the winnings, because
of the kooky way he plays.
Because he's bet high and he's won all these daily doubles and Final Jeopardy, he ups the ante.
Did like 101 last night, I thought.
Thing that he sits, what do you call that, a lector or a podium or whatever, their numbers are going to... Like, can it accommodate every amount of numbers?
Oh, about how big the wind gets?
Yeah, you know, the
digital. No, there's going to be somebody coming out with a chalkboard at some point.
When Mary Lou Retton or Nadia Comaneci got a 10, but it didn't show 10, you know.
Cause so she looks like she got a 1.
Yeah. I'm sure that was your reference, right? Nadia Comaneci.
Well, exactly. I'm old enough to remember when it happened. That's your top six right there.
That's all today for the top six at six.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Can I announce that party now?
No.
Oh.
No, sir.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Well, this James Holzhauser thing is probably making you think, wow, you know what would be cool? It'd be cool if I won $1.5 million. That's probably what you're thinking, right?
I would like $1.5 million.
It would be cool if you won $1.5 million, yeah.
Problem is, when I play Jeopardy at my house, I lose in my living room. And then you add television to that and pressure and a buzzer and lights. You know, I think I'm out pretty quickly. So for the rest of us, probably just heading for the gas station or the convenience store and playing the lottery is your best shot.
Well, here's the thing. The people that he's beating every day have beaten the odds just to get there. I mean, at first you have to pass an online test.
And is that how they do it?
Then there's an interview process. And so they're really smart, too, and they're really good at the mechanics of the game. But a lot of it comes down to being really quick with that clicker, the buzzer, because if you're not the first one in, you're locked out. So you might know the answer, but you'll never get a shot.
Well, then why wouldn't you just click right away?
Because if you don't know the answer, then, I mean, you got to make sure
Alex
you know
Trebek
it.
Will make fun of you?
Yeah, you'll be ridiculed.
Because I would just click first all the time. It'd just be, halfway through the question,
I believe on SNL, that's what Sean Connery did, wasn't
that's
it?
That's right.
And Burt Reynolds.
The greatest sketch on SNL ever is the often played, and they don't do it as much anymore because those guys aren't on, obviously.
Right.
But Will Ferrell is Alex Trebek,
yep,
and Norm Macdonald is Burt Reynolds. And who played Sean Connery?
I'm trying to remember.
Whoever played Sean Connery, tremendous. Oh, it was Daryl Hannah. Daryl Hannah. Daryl Hannah, no, not Daryl Hannah, the actress.
Hammond.
Daryl Hammond.
Yeah.
Daryl Hannah. I immediate pictured a mermaid outfit.
Yeah, me too.
Well, you know what's funny is I went full Ron Burgundy. You know, Mike says that in my headphones, and of course I repeat exactly what he says.
I want to know if Mike knows the difference between Daryl Hannah and Daryl Hammond.
Mike, do you know who Daryl Hannah is?
No, no. Head up, hands up.
Oh, my God. I'm so old. Pennsylvania and Indiana support the most disproportionate number of winners on a national scale when it comes to Powerball. Georgia and New York are the luckiest states for Mega Millions, and nobody seems to know why. I guess you got to go to Indiana to be your closest bet. You go to Indiana to pick yourself up some lottery tickets.
Does it have anything to do with the amount purchased? Like, are they buying more?
And weren't they playing Powerball in Indiana before we had it in Illinois? Because I remember people going over the border to buy their Powerball tickets.
Yeah, I suppose it's possible. You know, in 2012, students at MIT figured out a way to cheat the system to the tune of $8 million. Another couple managed to rake in $27 million over 10 years. If you take Massachusetts out of the running, then Arkansas takes the top spot as the best place to buy tickets, followed by South Carolina, Minnesota, and Georgia. West Virginia, for no apparent reason, happens to be the worst place to play, yet West Virginia produced one of the biggest lottery winners of all time, some old dude in a cowboy hat who won $300 million and then lost it all within about 5 years. This has been Lottery Corner for those of us who would lose at Jeopardy.
We were driving from the East Coast during one of those big Powerball jackpots. So I would stop at the service plazas on the turnpike in each state and buy some Powerball tickets. I figured that was increasing my odds.
How'd that go?
Didn't really work.
Not so much?
No.
Well, and Sandberg, you asked about buying more tickets. Mathematically, I think these people at MIT figured out a way. But if you buy 10 tickets instead of one, that doesn't change things.
Okay.
And Michael will come in right after he tells us who Daryl Hannah is to explain why that's the case. 6:29. Let's go back and get your headlines just a moment on 720 WGN. I just buzzed in. A texter wanted us to know that you can't just buzz in whenever you want. Apparently it's idiot-proofed, so an idiot like me couldn't ruin the game for everybody else.
I think that's true, now that I recall my days on Jeopardy.
Did anyone, either you or anyone on your staff, memorialize your conversation with Robert Mueller?
Yes.
Who did that?
There were notes taken of the call.
May we have those notes?
No.
Why not?
Why should you have them?
I'm telling Mom. For my notes, get your grubby paws off them. It's just unbelievable. It's just, Chuck, when your kids misbehave, they're more mature than what we saw yesterday. Chuck Todd joins us, by the way. And good morning to you, Chuck.
Well, good morning to you. He really just seems to come across as having disdain for the government. I mean, forget anything else. Just sort of, you know, there seems to be a lack of acknowledgement that people pay a salary, that he's somehow not above this. And I think it's that arrogance about it all that just doesn't sit well with a lot of people. It just comes across as, again, you work for the taxpayers, man.
Yeah. Now, when you...
Yeah, that was a little disconcerting.
When you watch these, I don't know about you, I'm sort of fascinated at the question, this will end at some point, and what's left of you after this ends? In other words, why would you take a reputation, whatever your reputation may be, and put it in the hands of the era of Donald Trump? What does Barr get out of this? Is it a need for relevance at this point in his life? What is the upside?
It might be, but you know, he strikes me as a guy who has spent too much time watching Fox and not enough time reading.
Mm-hmm.
Because
including the report, by the way.
He's got this virus that I've seen impact, you know, a handful of people who in another era were, you know, considered sort of fairly reasonable folks. You know, I sometimes think we just sort of underplay the power of the Fox virus and what it does to the brain sometimes, because Barr just seems like a different guy than 25 years ago. And what's the difference from 25 years ago? Sort of the conservative media echo chamber that just completely twists things now.
The Foxification, you know, of America.
But it used to be there was just a point of view ideological difference. Now it's the sun is blue. No, it's not. You claim it's not blue. You liberal you. That's sort of where we're at.
But that's the thing.
How information flows. So you sit here and say, how does Barr, and Barr lives in another world. Barr lives in this cocoon of, nobody laid a glove on him. He lives in a cocoon of everything went swimmingly. I mean, that's why I think there's people going, I don't understand what he's doing. He thinks he's doing great.
But that's the...
Everybody loves him.
That's the problem with all of this, when you combine the burnout of America on this entire process with you could turn on your TV and you could see a fair discussion of what happened, or you could turn on Fox and you could see a completely different discussion of what happened. There's only one truth. And the problem is America is getting presented with three: the truth, the far left, and the far right. And I understand why people go, well, I don't know what to believe.
I do. I just wish people would just use your common sense. Just use your common sense. And it's like, if you're just sitting there going, why, you know, people are acting funny. Why is that? And then, you know, look, for instance, that's not the most damning part of yesterday. With Barr is when he was forced to answer. I mean, look, I think the guy attempted to answer honestly every time. So when Kamala Harris asked him about the idea of starting other investigations and whether the president or someone at the White House has suggested or asked. And he sits there, I'm trying to grapple with the word suggest. He just answered the question.
Right, he just answered the question.
The president is trying to weaponize the Justice Department.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is Bill Barr going to let him do it or not? And I don't know if we know the answer to that question yet.
Pat Brady's here. Pat, say hi to our friend Chuck Todd.
Hey, Chuck, how you doing?
Hey, good morning, Pat.
Hey, I agree with all that, what you just led into, but isn't there a strain or a wing of the far right, which is really isn't too far from the far left, that firmly believes that because the president did it, it's legal? And it just kind of a...
Yes, a little bit of that. And I do think that, look, Barr comes at this from a legal point of view that he has. I mean, he believes in executive power, and in this case, he believes in ultimate executive power. And that, I mean, he might as well have said he believes that for at least the 4 years that he's president, that presidents are basically above the law temporarily. So Barr is consistent when he makes that argument. I do think, rather than saying there's a strain on the right that believes the president does it, it's legal, I would add this. There's a larger extra strain connected to that, that believes everybody's corrupt and Trump's just doing what anybody else would do, and at least he's doing it on my behalf and not theirs.
Right, exactly.
And that, to me, is the virus that we have in America.
That's the Chicago way, Chuck.
It really is.
Well, then apparently it's the American way for a lot of people.
Right. If you're going to be a criminal, if you're going to be a criminal, at least be a criminal that believes how I believe.
Yeah, I want my job at Streets and Sand.
I've talked to a few evangelical leaders when I've asked this question. And they're like, it's sort of, they don't quite say it this way, if you can't beat them, join them. Hey, if this is what works, then we'll align with him. I mean, I do think, and this is Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the ultimate transactional politician. He believes, because Roy Cohn, who's maybe the most one of the more corrupt government lawyers we've ever had in the history of this country, is the person he learned most of politics from. Well, no wonder he thinks all politics is transactional. It's not about whether something's legal or not legal. It's about whether you can get away with it and whether you have the power to make sure you get away with it.
Bob Mueller is going to be asked to testify to Congress probably as soon as the 15th, which is a couple weeks away. I've long passed the point of going, well, this will fix it. I think he'll come in and he'll answer questions, but I don't know that we're going to get anything out of that we don't already know. What are your thoughts?
The games, as long as Republicans control the Senate and Democrats, as long as we have this split controlling Congress, Congress can't compel, I think, the type of cooperation that the House Democrats would like to have, because they just don't have the power of having the Senate committees also asking. So, and I think that if Mueller is only testifying in the House, never testifies in the Senate, I think it does sort of lessen the impact of it. And look, I think that basically Barr pulled this off for Trump already. You know, the 4 week head start on spinning the Mueller report is game, set, and match. I think it's already, you know, to put it in chess terms, I think checkmate's already happened, but Democrats still want to believe that they just heard the word check and that they somehow have another move. I don't think they have another move beyond the ballot November of 2020.
A couple last quick things. One is, if you don't force Barr to testify to the House, what matters? In other words, in a rule of law society, which we still believe we live in, you got to uphold the rules, even if you know how it's going to end.
Well, look, this is the dilemma Democrats have in general about impeachment and the larger story, which is history is going to judge the House Democrats not on whether it was politically a good idea, but whether they have participated in eroding more barriers, or did they fight to try to keep the guardrails up? Look, I don't think it's good politics for them to be forced to have to basically file lawsuits and hold members in contempt and all these things in order to try to get people to testify. I think it will that then it will numb the public over time, and it will, and you know, which is exactly what Trump wants, right? Is to make it look like all Democrats want to do is, you know, so he forces them. He doesn't cooperate. He forces them to basically drag any cooperation out of them. I think politically that's risky for the Democrats, but I think historically it's even riskier if they don't.
It's Chuck Todd. Watch him every day on MTP Daily, Meet the Press, and the Chuck Todd Cast. His least favorite name for a really good podcast that you ought to listen to.
I'm warming up to it.
As I think you should.
But I'm really happy with the podcast. That part I really like.
Yeah, no, it's great. And I am a regular, as you know. Now, I believe that Donald Trump sits in the White House and the voices in his head are quite loud, but I believe there's many nights where he sits on the end of the bed going, I can't believe they're buying this crap. I cannot believe I'm getting away with this. So I'm hoping that we get that.
I don't
at some
know
point.
If he says, I can't believe it. He's like, I told you I'd pull this off. I think he's that cocky. It's more of, I knew I could pull this off. I knew I could fool the country.
Mine makes for a better TV movie. I hope you had a great...
It does, because those monologues are always good if you write good dialogue.
Exactly. I hope you had a great break. Best of the family. We'll watch you this afternoon.
Thank you, sir. You got it, bud.
There you go.
Thanks, guys. See you, Pat.
That's Chuck Todd, and at 6:51, Eddie Olczyk will pick the winner of the Kentucky Derby in a second with the favorite out.
Are you sure?
No, yeah. Should I not
give us the winner?
He's going to give us the winner.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got Fast Horsey. I believe he's in the seventh position.
I'm telling you, it's a lock.
But it rained last night.
Exactly. This horse loves the slump. It's got his bloodlines. His father was a mutter. His mother was a mutter.
His mother was a mutter?
What did I just say? Come on, let's go up to the office. I'm going to call my bookie. Hey, don't tell anybody.
To the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
I got the horse right here. The name is Paul Revere. And here's a guy that says if the weather is clear, can do, can do.
Our friend Eddie Olczyk apparently has no sense of smell because he's lived his entire life in horse barns and NHL and regular hockey dressing rooms where it always smells funky. And Edzo's with us now. Good morning, Eddie.
Wow, that sounds like a great cologne for somebody. How are you, Steve?
I'm great, man. How are you?
You know, it looks like it's going to rain again on Derby Day, so we're...
Another mutter.
Yeah, another mutter. We got to find out whose mutter was a mutter, you know, so... obviously disappointing. I mean, last year was the wettest derby in history. Maybe you can get Skilling on the blower there and ask him if he can help us out here.
No kidding.
But that kind of thrown a wrinkle into everything, and people have not heard the favorite for the 145th running of the Kentucky Derby scratched yesterday due to a breathing problem. So now it is really up for grabs. So if you have an opinion, stay with it, because this race is absolutely wide open.
20 horses still starting, I believe.
And 20 horses.
And here's my favorite, Improbable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's something
no
really...
Argument. No argument. The 5 horse trained by Bob Baffert. And Bob Baffert is the, you know, he is the Tiger Woods of horse racing. Everybody knows who Bob is, and the recent history speaks for itself. 2 Triple Crown training jobs by him in the last 4 years. Last year, Justify winning all 3 jewels of the Triple Crown. He has 3 horses in the Kentucky Derby. He has Improbable, he has Game Winner, and he has Roadster, the horse that that I like. Now, the only question I have for Roadster is, can he handle an off track, which it looks like we're going to get on Saturday. But Improbable proven on an off track. 3rd race off of some time off, and Bob Baffert looking to win his 6th Kentucky Derby, which would tie the record at the Derby. So I can't talk to anybody off any horse that's trained by Bob Baffert, Steve.
Eddie, good morning. Pretty rare, isn't it, that the favorite in the Kentucky Derby gets scratched this close to the race?
Yeah, we've had in the past where there have been horses that, especially in the Triple Crown races, that have been either scratched the day prior or the morning of, because look, all these horses are looked at. I would imagine when you have a horse like this at Derby, the horses are probably looked over and scoped through, probably
probably hourly, which is probably exaggerating a little bit, but you know, these horses are looked after and making sure that every hair is in place. And it's obviously disappointing. It really is. I mean, Richard Mandela, the trainer for Omaha Beach, was looking for his first Kentucky Derby win. He's a Hall of Fame trainer. Mike Smith, the jockey at Omaha Beach, jumped off one of Bob Baffert's horses, Roadster, to ride Omaha Beach, and he ends up getting scratched. So it looks like in a game of Duck, Duck, Goose, it doesn't look like he's going to have a mount in the Kentucky Derby. And, of course, Mike Smith won the Triple Crown last year with Justified. So it is odd, David, but it has happened. It's disappointing. There is a letdown, but today we're expecting about 50,000 people at the track today, and then probably 125,000 tomorrow for Oaks, and then we're looking at, weather permitting, we're looking at probably north of 150,000 to 165,000 people on Derby Day on Saturday.
How about that?
Wow.
Dave, last quick here?
Well, real quick, everybody wants a long shot. what do you think of win-win-win?
Yeah, you know what? I don't mind it. Again, I think that the horse has the has the breeding to be able to run on and off track. And again, I mean, that's what we're kind of basing everything on. You know, more than 48 hours away from the race, it's going to be an off track. Has the ability to be able to run on it. Has run one time. But I would say I would use a horse who I'm going to use in a lot of my tickets. And again, this is very fluid, and it's hard to kind of project how the track is going to play on Saturday. But I'm looking at a horse by the name of Code of Honor, the 13 horse trained by Shug McGahee, who won with the horse by the name of Orb a couple of years ago. Johnny Velasquez, the 13. I think there's going to be a lot of value with Code of Honor. Training very well on these eyes and the chair that I sit in. I think we'll handle the off track well. I think can go the distance. Everybody's talking about how much speed there might be or not might not be in this race, but I think Code of Honor will be a little bit closer than normal. And you know, if you like, I think Code of Honor's got a chance to be every bit of 12-1, and there's nothing wrong with a 12-1 shot. Look, full disclosure, coming in, I like Roadster, the 17 horse. I'm going to use them. I just don't know how much. I'm going to use all three of Bob Baffert's for sure. 100%. I'm going to use all. He's got the 5, the 16, and the 17 horses. But if you like a long shot, don't be afraid to put a couple of shekels on Code of Honor.
And once he wins his shekels, he'll be back doing the great job he does with NBC Sports through the NHL playoffs. And, of course, our great friend and yours, Eddie Doc Emmerich. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate you coming on.
Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. That's Eddie Olczyk and the new mayor, Lori Lightfoot, who is about to take the office in just a matter of a few days here. She's going to join us in a couple of minutes. Stand by for that. News right after this, live from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
In very short order here, try that again, Steve. Mayor Lori Lightfoot will become the new mayor. I refer to her as mayor now because it's the right thing to do. And I hope she's getting used to the title. Does it sound funny when people say Mayor Lori Lightfoot? Are you getting used to it yet?
You know, it still kind of takes me a little bit by surprise, but I'm getting used to it increasingly.
Now, when you wake up in the morning, what's the first thing you think about in regards to work?
Well, it depends on the day, but it's usually a long list. We have a lot of planes up in the air. And I want to make sure that we have a flight plan to land them.
Well, that's why I'm optimistic about you for the city. And I think I've told you this in person, but I believe because you've lived a life of busy and a life where you've had to be organized and tackle some pretty big things, that you are going to jump in and be able to handle this big city the way it needs to be handled.
Well, look, I have to really give hats off to a tremendous team of people that have been working really, really diligently since Election Day, to both understand the magnitude of the challenges that we have, working on executing on a number of different initiatives that I set forth during the course of the campaign, and also just standing up a new government, right? We're hiring a lot of new people. We're going to be bringing different voices into government. And so that's been an exciting exciting process to go through.
So the summer surge in crime is always a concern. The other day, you had a meeting with top law enforcement officials. What can you share with us about how it's going to be handled, not just on the west side, but in the loop and everywhere?
Look, you know, the violence that we've been experiencing all over the city is truly an epidemic. And in my view, it's a public health epidemic. So we've got to treat it like that and really start thinking about what is driving it, what's the source causes. So having that conversation is somewhat new, but it's important for us to be thinking about it in those terms. In the short term, we have to have a plan for violence this summer. Right? We're not going to be able to do all the things that we know are necessary, like making neighborhood investments, making sure that we've got a really good, strong school, network of schools, neighborhood schools all across the city. Those are the things that are going to take time and focus, but we have summer upon us. So what I've been pushing in conversations, not only with law enforcement, but we also had a convening of key cabinet members on Tuesday, is what is our plan? Where do we think that the violence is really going to be at its peak? What are the neighborhoods? What are the beats? And then how do we make sure that we have city resources focused and ready to mitigate what we anticipate? And how do we bring ourselves together in a coordinated fashion so that we're not just thinking about this as a law enforcement first and only plan, because it's not going to work. It hasn't been working. So we have a lot of really smart and capable people who work in different city agencies, whether it's Department of Public Health, CPS, the parks, libraries, and I'm only naming a few, but they all need to be all in, have information from the police department about where we see the hot spots evolving, come up with a specific plan so that their resources and programming over the course of the summer are particularly focused on those areas, and then be in constant communication with each other, because you go in with a plan making basic assumptions of what you think is going to happen, but invariably things change. Assumptions are off by something, or a new factor comes into play. So having a plan that is nimble and flexible enough based upon communication is going to be really important as well.
You know, Superintendent Eddie Johnson has been very open in coming on the show and talking about things, and I was very impressed with him in the Jussie Smollett case and talking about how he felt about it as an African-American male, but also his pride in the city, his concern for the city and the city being besmirched. Is he going to be your superintendent?
Well, what I've said consistently since really last year and throughout the two campaigns is the time for thinking about any leadership change is not now. I personally have a very good relationship with the superintendent. I think he's done some very good things to move the department in the right direction. But I'm not going to have that conversation with him until after the summer, and we'll see where we are. The level of violence that we've been experiencing and the police department's response to it simply has been inadequate. And I think he'd be the first to tell you that. So we need to work together in this way. We worked together previously when I was president of the police board, but this is an entirely different circumstance. And I do like him. I want him to be successful. As a city, we need him to be successful, but I'm not going to put my personal feelings ahead of making sure that we've got a leader and a leadership team that is focused on keeping our community safe.
Yeah, and I think having him on the job this summer is smart. Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot's on the phone. Pat Brady's here. Pat, say hello.
Hey, Mayor. Congratulations. Very happy to see you in that spot. That election was a real nail-biter.
So
I think there's 50 awards. I think you won 51.
A squeaker.
But congratulations. Hey, but my question is, and there's for you as a man from a management perspective, and it's not necessarily a bad thing, but there you have a, I would say, a mandate, but you got a very diverse city council. How are you going to be approaching that to get your agenda done?
Well, we've been trying to be very thoughtful about making sure that we really understand from top to bottom the nature of city council, not just the people and the chairman. But also, what do these committees actually do? What are their budgets? Who are their employees? What's their function? What's the plan for them? I'm not going to be an authoritarian mayor. I want to have a good, productive working relationship with city council. But there's a lot of questions that we still have that we're looking on getting answers to. It won't surprise you that there's not a significant amount of transparency around some of the nuts and bolts related to city council. And that's true for even us, and they can ask about data, which also tells me a lot about things that need to be fixed. So, look, we're engaging with people who are very supportive of us during the course of the campaign. I think I've reached out to almost every sitting city council member. I've reached out to a lot of the new people that are coming in. Those conversations are ongoing. We're going to be, you know, convening a gathering of all of the city aldermen that will be sworn in on May 20th ahead of inauguration. So I expect to have a good working relationship with the city council. But I also feel like, you know, unlike maybe past mayors, I don't need to have a 50-0, 49-0 vote on every matter that I put forward that goes before city council. Democracy is messy. You want to have divergent views come in. People actually deliberate and debate. And I think that that's going to be important, and I'm going to push for that, because it's going to help restore the legitimacy of government, and particularly the city council, that people see that we've got an actually functioning, deliberative body, and not just a rubber stamp for the mayor.
Sandberg, question for Lori Lightfoot.
Lori, I've got a two-part question. First, how often did you hear since winning that the reason why people voted for you is because you came into the Steve Cochran Show on during the polar vortex?
Yeah, I think that's probably what you hear constantly.
Yeah, basically every day.
Yeah, that's what I figured. My second question is, since what you have done here is historic, that also, it's amazing, but it also can open you up to be more scrutinized. And so is there anything you've told your daughter about how to handle mom maybe being picked apart more so than you were prior to being the mayor?
Well, look, I think the runoff election really prepared us as a family for what scrutiny looks like. You know, I don't have to tell you all that it was a pretty nasty and challenging time. And so having to explain to my daughter that sometimes adults lie and make things up. Sometimes people say things that are intended to be really hurtful. Those are hard conversations, but we felt like we had to have them. And also just, you know, telling her that the friends that she had are her friends. There's going to be a lot of new people that are paying attention to her, but it's important for her to really understand that the new people that may be flocking, maybe well-intentioned, but her friends that were her friends way before, you know, her mother gained a measure of notoriety, those are the people that she needs to rely upon and be careful in scrutinizing new people that are kind of flocking to her side.
Yeah, it's great parental advice. How's the transition with Mayor Emanuel?
You know, I think we've had a very good and generous conversations and engagement at the staff level. I haven't had a lot of contact with him personally, but that really hasn't been needed because there's been so much that's gotten accomplished at the staff level. You know, I think he really set the tone for, you know, generosity from the very beginning. And that process really started even before the outcome of the April 2nd election. He started and charged his department heads with making sure that they were putting together briefing materials for the incoming mayor, which have been extremely helpful. And we've used really on a daily basis in the course of the transition. I have to give credit to his chief of staff, Joe Deal, who's been very, very helpful to us and our team on a daily basis. So I think so far so good.
Well, and that's what we need to hear, so that's great. Listen, I look forward to, as we had with Mayor Emanuel, a very open-door policy here with you as well to talk about the good stuff going on in the city and the tough stuff, too. So thanks for taking the time today.
Oh, my pleasure. And I'll definitely be back.
All right. Thank you. That's Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot.
The Steve Cochran Show presents the most valuable person on the planet. The MVPP is sponsored by Mega Pros. They make it fun to get stuff done.
And now it's time to move on to a little something we call
the most valuable person on the planet.
By the way, before we do the MVPP, a great one today suggested by a listener. Pat Brady brought up the organization, Tuskegee, next to me, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, and asked me to MC the gala this year again, which is a great time, and meet some amazing kids. Anyway, you going to bring Steve Davis in next week after his son gets married?
Yeah, and yes, I will. But first of all, thank you very much for doing that. I never realized until I asked you to start doing this how truly talented you are. You do a great job. Because I never saw it in the
other aspect. I always thought he was just hype. Turns out he can take money from rich people.
No, you did a fantastic job. And it's one of those things, that, and you've lived it now 2 or 3 times. When you raise money for something and you see the immediate effect because you get to talk to respectful, appreciative, great kids that are all really going amazing. On great things. So, yeah, Steve Davis, the founder, his brainchild, and this organization, it's one of the things I'm happiest I've ever worked with.
Tuskegee next, and again, we'll talk more about that next week. Your MVPP, standing by on the phone right now, Catherine McKeever. Good morning, Catherine. How are you?
Good morning. I'm a little nervous.
Don't be nervous. Listen, my daughter's a BCBA. And,
awesome.
She is committed, as you would have to be to be a BCBA, but committed on a level that amazes me every day. So thanks for the work that you and all behavioral analysts do in this field of study and this field of therapy when it comes to kids with autism, because it's not just the kids, it's the family you treat as well.
It is. It is. That's truly my belief.
Now, people call you a miracle worker.
No, they don't. I just work with really great people.
And you were nominated again by a listener because of the work that you do. But most of this work is done in the Shanahan School District, right?
It is through an organization called SOIC, which is a special ed cooperative in Will County.
And does SOIC do something different than other school groups do?
I think their level of support and the people they hire are just so dedicated and committed to learning and helping not only the children but the families. We work with, our director, Dr. Bill Roslin, he really has supported in making the program the best it can be. And I'm a speech pathologist with a lot of behavior training, and he recognizes the needs. I don't know. He just lets us do all kinds of wonderful things like a parent institute day and family trainings, and it's been really great.
Well, and you should be proud of this, but one of the things that I think really stands out is well-meaning folks and folks that maybe aren't so well-meaning and just say inappropriate things sometimes don't understand the lack of contact a child with autism makes. In other words, eye contact or emotional contact and things of that nature. What is it about you that's able to break down that wall as you have so many times, according to everybody I've talked to about you?
What is it about me? I think I'm persistent, and I kind of have always... years and years ago, someone shared a quote with me by Louis Pasteur that said, when I approach a child, I approach him with tenderness, but also with respect for what he may become. And I kind of take them from where they're at, and I don't mind getting kind of crazy to get them engaged. And it works.
Yeah, it does. Sometimes goofy is the best route.
Yeah,
every day.
Look at that. She's calling you a goof. One of the things that you have to deal with is parents and families, and sometimes they're coming to grips with or don't even fully understand what a life with a child with autism is. And you've been a great bridge for them as well. You're not only helping the child, but helping them.
Mm-hmm. I do, because I really believe that, helping families to go from where they're at to understand that their child is still going to learn. He may just learn differently than others, and that we can celebrate success just at a different level or at a great level. I can honestly say that the families know that we're there to support them the most we can. I go out on home visits quite often after school just to help the families learn what we're doing so that it can carry over into the home. And I enjoy that, too. I really do.
Yeah, and my daughter works a lot in the homes with kids and with families, along with work at a center by her side out in Burr Ridge.
Okay.
It really is.
Talents that work out there.
Yeah, it's just amazing work you guys do, and thank you for doing it. And yes. I think this is one of the great advancements in treatment of kids with autism, just to be able to maximize everybody's life.
It is. It is. It really, really is.
So guess what? You're the most valuable person on the planet.
Well, thank you. I'm very honored, but there's lots of wonderful people doing this.
Yeah, I'm sorry you have to take the role today. I'm sorry it has to be you. But thank you for being on.
I appreciate it.
And thank you for listening. Keep up the great work. Hold on one sec. We have something for you.
That's how you know she's doing her life's work and what she's meant to do, that she doesn't even recognize it as being special.
Right. Well, based on what you know about Amy and what I tell you about Amy when I brag about her all the time to all you guys, they don't have time to realize how good they are.
No, they don't.
All right, it's 7:34. Newt Gingrich is coming up. That'll be interesting. He's got a new book to plug, but, you know, I'll ask him how he thinks things are going. And I'm sure we'll get along just fine. Also coming up more with Pat Brady in just a second as well. Your headlines next on 720 WGN.
Going forward, what if a foreign adversary, let's now say North Korea, offers a presidential candidate dirt on a competitor in 2020? Do you agree with me the campaign should immediately contact the FBI? If a foreign intelligence service, a representative of a foreign government says, we have dirt on your opponent, should they say, I love it, let's meet, or should they contact the FBI?
If a foreign intelligence service does, yes.
I'm sorry, what? Yesterday, Barr did this thing where if he was caught or he was uncomfortable and didn't have an answer, he'd pause or he'd take a long time to answer and he'd try to run out the clock. Really, just a shameful display of somebody who was once really well regarded in Washington and now not showing up today for the House investigation of the Mueller report and behavior because the Democrats are in charge and because the Democrats have attorneys that they'd like to ask some of the questions is completely outrageous and hypocritical. And the Republicans at this point are just hoping you'll forget the fact that when there was a question about whether or not somebody should be confirmed for the Supreme Court and recommended for the same, they brought an attorney in to question a woman accusing that same future Supreme Court justice of a sexual assault. But then again, Pat Brady, that was months ago. That's so yesterday's news.
Well, in yesterday's news, I was watching the attorney general. I'm like, wow, he and Bill Clinton should open up a consulting practice on how to lie in a deposition. Because I've never seen two. Clinton did it in 94. In fact, a friend of mine did the interview and said the guy was unbelievable in just not telling the truth, but make it sound like it maybe is half the truth.
Well, and that's where the famous, that's what it depends on what the definition of is.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
And yesterday we was talking about suggest. Well, what does that mean?
Right.
Not that I recall statements like that, which are ways you get out of telling the truth.
If Barr does not go forward with answering to questions that are fair to be asked and responding to subpoenas and that thing, then what do we do about the rule of law?
Well, they have a process there, and they just hold them in contempt and see if they enforce it, but it's up to them to do that. But the one thing I do agree with the Attorney General yesterday, this is no longer within the Justice Department. This is a political determination made by Congress. But the unfairness in what he did, I think, as Attorney General, it's clear he's attorney for Donald Trump now. He's not the attorney for us like he's supposed to be. He clearly misled the public as to the contents of the Mueller report. And if you read that report like I did and others, you understand what Mueller was trying to do, that this is just going to leave it up to Congress. And he has misled Congress. He misled the American people. But it doesn't. We talked about earlier with Chuck Todd. It doesn't seem to bother him. He seemed to be bothered by the fact that he's responsive to the people, which is the height of arrogance. And that is a very, very important job.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact that he's doing it in the way he's doing it should concern everybody. Newt Gingrich is scheduled to join us in a few minutes. One of the things I want to ask him about is the end of the Republican Party, because I miss the Republican Party. The Republican Party that I knew was a party that cared about debt and deficits. It was a party that cared about the world order that we worked so hard to establish. It was a party that cared about how we treated Russia and the fact that we recognized them as the enemy and potential danger that they are. There's a free trade party. As I've said many times, you'd have to get dental records to identify this Republican Party.
Well, I think now it's the party was taken over by President Trump And the historically, the Republican Party has been the conservative party. I'm a conservative, but the party right now, the Republican Party led by him, is not a conservative party. And all the things you just mentioned, the party doesn't seem to stand for anymore. And that troubles a lot of people that have been lifelong Republicans, that we just don't believe in the things you mentioned. But it doesn't seem to have much effect, at least on the rank and file, because he's got a 70-80% approval rating, and he's going to walk into this nomination, and that's going to create a difficult question for a lot of us that support conservative principles but don't really have a conservative candidate.
Give me Springfield quickly, if you would, before we take the break and come back with Mr. Gingrich. Springfield meaning what's up with some of the things being pushed?
The big thing right now, and it happened yesterday, is the governor's big agenda item is this progressive income tax, which requires an amendment to the Illinois Constitution, and it passed through the Senate yesterday. Now, that's been a big headline today, but really it's kind of meaningless. It's a rubber stamp to get through the Senate. There's a supermajority of Democrats, not diminishing the importance of the Senate, but the reality is the political battle is going to be in the Illinois House. And they only have 20 legislative days left with a lot in the agenda, this progressive tax, and we haven't even started talking about a budget. So a lot's going to happen here in the next 3 or 4 weeks.
Keep an eye on it for us, and keep us up to date on it.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Well, imagine, if you will, a Navy SEAL, troubled, plays by his own rules, opioid addicted. Now he's a hired gun, and he's got a secret mission. He's got to get a Russian operative out of the Soviet Union before the Russian government can poison him. It's the novel called Collusion. And the former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich, joins us. Good morning, Mr. Gingrich.
Good morning. It's great to be with you.
How about the summary of that plot? You know, I'm not just another chump. I knew what your book's about.
I was going to say, you did pretty good. I think it's fascinating. And, you know, partly we wrote Collusion to remind people that behind the Mueller report and the politics and everything else, there really is a continuous Russian effort to penetrate the United States, and that there are real dangers, and that the Russians have a passion for using poison and more than any other country in the world. And when you weave them all together, you suddenly have a pretty sobering story.
So this book lays out the danger very well. Now, even though it's a novel, lays out the danger very well. What about the real world? Because we still don't know what the notes were shared between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump. He didn't talk to his staff about it. There's too many things that still make Russia a threat that I don't believe we take seriously enough.
Oh, I think that's right. And I think that's part of why I hope that Attorney General Barr will go back and look at things that have not been investigated. I mean, Bill Clinton got $500,000 from a Russian bank for a speech. The Clinton Foundation got millions and millions of dollars from the Russians. Secretary of State Clinton approved the Russians getting a substantial amount of American uranium supply. There are a lot of things that we don't fully understand. The Russians, I think, are going to continually be harassing us. And that's part of why they're in Venezuela. They're trying to, at relatively low cost, create a nuisance to us in our own backyard.
Well, I'd like to finish what's unfinished, but I don't want to spend a lot of time on Mueller, because I'd rather talk about your view of the world here. And the reason I want to talk about that is because we're going into a 2020 election where I don't know that we have the safety guards and guardrails in place to prevent more messing around through social media and other stuff, not just by Russia, but by China and other places. So what are we doing about it?
Well, I think there's a pretty serious cyber effort underway, both at the FBI and at the National Security Agency, to track and to deal with these things. And part of it is just publicity. I mean, part of it's calling it out when it happens. none of us should believe that Putin is normal, or that he's a reasonable guy, or that we can expect nice things from him. And none of us should believe that Xi Jinping heads up a modern, open, democratic society in China. They're both dictatorships. They're different kinds of dictatorships, but they're both dictatorships. They both want to penetrate and impact the United States, and they're both dangerous.
Have you had a chance to tell the president that?
Sure.
And what does he say?
Oh, I think he agrees. Look, he's done more. You look at what we've done in Ukraine. You look at the sanctions we put on the Russian oligarchs. You look at the toughness he's taken with China on trade. There are a lot of different things moving, and there are a lot of moving parts. We have to probably go a lot further than we have now. But I think that we have certainly begun to readjust to the reality. And, you know, I mean, you had Joe Biden yesterday saying, oh, the Chinese aren't really a big deal. Don't worry about them. Well, that's nuts.
Well, that's a mistake. I agree with you. That's a mistake. And that's something that he never should have said out loud, even if he does believe it. Having said that, you have never been anything but Republican. You grew up Republican. It's in your blood. It's always been in your blood. And nobody could ever say Newt's a waffling Republican. Having said that, I don't know if you heard in the intro, prior to your intro, I said, and I mean this, I miss the Republican Party, because this is not the Republican Party. Debt and deficit, free trade out the window, talking to dictators like they're our pals. That's not the Republican Party you represented.
No, and I agree at one level, but at another level, I'll tell you, the world has changed. Look, I was very much for free trade. Free trade, when you're dealing with an emerging Chinese economy, is an invitation to get ripped off every morning. I mean, so it's a different world. I'm the only Speaker of the House in your lifetime to balance the federal budget for four straight years, and Bill Clinton and I worked together. We reformed welfare, we cut taxes, we increased economic growth, and the budget was balanced for four straight years, the only time in your lifetime. So I'm not, you know, I'm not automatically giving up on any of these things, but I do think we're in a very different world. I think when you have a comedian beat the incumbent president in Ukraine with 73% of the vote, it's a signal of how different the world is becoming, and I don't think any of us fully understand that.
Yeah, but different in a way that's dangerous, in a way that in our lifetime we've not seen.
I think, well, certainly since the fall of the Soviet Empire in 91. I mean, once upon a time, there was a real empire, and it really did want to defeat us and to dominate the world, and that was very dangerous. And could have easily involved nuclear war if we'd been unlucky. So in that sense, I think there was a hiatus. There was a period there for about 20 years when things looked a lot better and we thought we were getting towards normalcy. But look, I mean, I'm one of the people who I really thought that the Chinese were going to open up their society and become much more like the West. I don't believe that anymore. Somebody once asked John Maynard Keynes why he had changed his opinion, and he said, because the facts changed. He said, what do you do when the facts change? So I'm sharing with you in part, I think in terms of the Russian effort to penetrate the U.S., it has not changed. They've been doing it since 1917. I think their passion for poison is not going to change. I think to think of Putin as anything except a KGB-trained intelligence officer, we open our book with a quote from Putin who said that the Cold War never ended. So I think it's a sobering reminder of where they're coming from.
Yeah, and Vladimir Putin gets up every morning, goes to bed every night with an idea of the USSR rebuilding and owning the world the way they thought they once did. Book's called Collusion. It's with Newt Gingrich and Pete Early, a tremendous writer. And it's Newt's 500th book. Before I let you go, the behavior of the president matters. And you've called him out several times, but sure. You talked about how you and Bill Clinton had worked together, even when you couldn't have disagreed more on so many different things. In what universe do we live now where if, you know, I say the sky's blue, somebody on the other side says, no, it's red, when nobody can agree on anything and nobody wants to work on anything, and you got an attorney general who's not even going to show up today and is blowing off a subpoena. We can't have it in this country.
Well, I mean, first of all, today is sort of pathetic. You know, the notion that the House Democrats are so insecure that they can't ask questions and they need to rely on their staff lawyers says a lot.
But the Republicans did the same thing, Newt, with the Supreme Court. So, I mean, throw that out. Shouldn't the attorney general step up and say, I'm the attorney general, I'm going to go do what's right, and I'm certainly smart enough and can handle whatever they throw at me?
Oh, no, I would never advise him to go into a hearing where you have 8 or 10 lawyers who spend full time figuring out how to trap you. I think that would just be an invitation to a mess.
Well, just tell the truth.
To your question.
Tell the truth. That's the problem. Nobody tells the truth anymore.
Well, I think I'm telling you the truth.
No, not you.
My honest opinion.
Yeah, but listen.
But let me go back to your point about working together. You know, Trump turns to Nancy Pelosi in a meeting and says, if I give you every single thing you want in the budget, Will you give me the money for the wall? She says, never. Now, if you offer somebody everything they've asked for, and they say, no, I'm not going to cooperate any. I don't care how much you give me. I'm not going to cooperate. How do you negotiate that?
Well, you listen, you can't negotiate with people that don't want to negotiate. But I think both sides have shown that they can be children. The president of the United States, and this is a problem Barack Obama had way too many times. You're not the president of the Democrats. You're not the president of the Republicans. You have to serve the party that elected you. However, you're the president of the United States, and that means everybody. And I haven't seen a whiff of Donald Trump understanding that.
I think that he would be better off to understand that, in fact, as president of the entire country, he's stronger than as a candidate. And he still has, I think, sometimes too many of the characteristics of being a candidate rather than being the guy who leads all the American people and in many ways leads the world.
I agree with you 100%, and I'll tell people what I always tell them. It's collusion, the book. Go out and get two copies. You're careful. You won't lose the two copies. You can give it to a friend, but there could be a Russian spy who takes one of your copies. So buy three. Collusion with former Speaker Newt Gingrich. Thanks. I'll talk to you again.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
There you go. It's 8:05. Pat Brady, thank you for coming in. Is there anything else we ought to plug?
Great job with that interview. I thought he was very good. A guy that usually is very much in the president's corner, which is fine. He actually gave some pretty honest answers, so I think that was a great interview.
So, well, thank you for that. And when will we see you again?
I don't know, Steve.
You got other shows to do?
Yeah.
Okay.
They pay for my card.
Tell Eric I said hi.
I will see.
All right, we'll come back with Dean in a second in the news and the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey.
It's Moron Entertainment, a service of Moron Industries.
America's favorite entertainment segment.
Dean Richards joins us. I have an idea, and I hope we can put this together. And Super Joe, you would be the key to this. Radio Bozo Buckets. Radio Bozo Buckets, where we...
It's actually called Grand Prize Game.
Yeah, not here. So... We would actually hear the contestant toss the ball and whether or not it goes into said bucket through how many buckets are there? Six?
Six buckets.
Six buckets.
Grand prize game buckets.
And at the sixth bucket, of course, you win a weekend in the Dells with Dean.
Yeah.
So,
so like it would be the throwing would be a swoop kind of noise.
Pew!
Could I do the play-by-play?
Yeah, it'd be
the only problem is
that would be the
yours play-by. Only how? Hit one.
Pew!
Clanks around a little. Yeah, there you go.
How does
you all right? I feel like you're having a stroke right now.
How does the ball go in the bucket?
that was that noise, the popping noise.
This is the ball in the air. Ready?
I got that.
That's it clanking in the bucket.
No, yeah. That's it missing and popping out.
See, it's confusing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is a workshop. We don't have it all completely down yet.
All first-run ideas get introduced on the air.
Sounds right. Stupid.
Except Moober. Moober didn't Moober. Sound stupid.
No, Moober is a great idea.
Yeah, Moober right now is being put together.
Several people in the agricultural community wanting to back my idea on that of cows taking people from place to place.
Oh, I thought you were talking about my mobile valet service. Somebody came up to me yesterday and said, hey, Steve, just one question about your mobile valet service. What's that going to cost? I said, how are you going to make that number work? I said, I don't know. You know, maybe $100 to park your car for 15 minutes. I'm not saying it's cost effective, but boy, wouldn't it be convenient.
Would you have surge pricing?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So would we with the cows. we've had actual surges.
Like stampedes?
Yeah. Sometimes they'll stop, though. You might be in a hurry to get someplace, and they'll want to stop and eat someone's lawn.
Ah.
But that's really the only downside that I can see so far.
Channing Tatum's in the news. Kanye's in the news.
And in the nude.
And...
And Kanye, Tatum, not Kanye.
They're looking for a young Kanye, and I think I'm ready. Tanned, rested, and ready.
Yeah, you'd be good. Maybe not quite tanned enough, but you'd...
little something from the Billboard Music Awards or two. Yeah, let me ask you something, Sandberg. Could you watch these shows?
I do.
Mary Vandeveld, you might even watch these shows. I don't know if you're not watching Survivor. But when Taylor Swift, when somebody comes off stage like Ciara, I think, did last night.
She did.
Ciara.
And Ciara in my world. And she comes up and dances, and Taylor Swift sort of dances with her.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It sort of looks like Taylor Swift is stealing the thunder.
People have accused Taylor Swift of stealing thunder.
Is it true or is it not true?
Dean, wouldn't you say whenever people say that?
Front row singing and dancing up a storm, which is, I mean, she's obviously enjoying the performance, but come on. Sit down and let the other people, let the person on stage.
Can't you just applaud? Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. Woo! As we all know, I am a Swiftie. So
I pulled a clip specifically of her performance last night just for you.
Thank you very much, Dean.
Christian Bale also coming up. You know, Christian Bale would be really good at playing the Bozo Buckets game on the radio. Woo!
I don't want to be the one to ask him, would you like to play the bucket game, or as it's actually known, the grand prize game?
Ray's on the phone. Yes, Ray.
Yeah, hi. I ran out of milk this morning. Would Moober have been able to help me out?
Yes.
With my cereal?
That's the brilliant part about my Moober, is that you get a ride. Yeah. If you're thirsty, you can get a glass of milk.
Is it squeeze your own udders, or do you have a technical team that does that?
Well, you can squeeze your own. Some people like the... excuse me? But there's one. That's for you, Nick. The... You can squeeze your own. What the hell?
Yeah, what the hell? Squeeze your own.
And or for an extra fee, somebody else will squeeze them for you.
I tell you what, give Ray for calling in. If he calls back, give Ray a cow. I don't know if we have those on the prize list this morning. And we'll come back in just a second.
I like when people call in and ask a question and then they hang up before we can give them good, serious, honest answers.
262 Texter says, hey, I took a new service called Canoober into work this morning. Taking a canoe because of all the rain.
Yeah.
See what they did there?
That's nice. Really topical. Hard. Very topical.
Back with those stories I mentioned in
what
a moment.
What do you do with the canoe when you get to work, though? There's the problem.
Apparently it's like this scooter thing in San Diego. You just strand them on the streets.
So you call Moober and they come and get the canoe.
Ah, see, we're already expanding.
Yep. What about the oars? And you got those too.
Yeah, we got a lot of things going on.
Doesn't happen with a cow.
Texter just said, what's with the Bozo bucket? Sounds very aggravating. What do you mean, these? Woo! What's coming up at 8:30?
Like an 80s video game.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor.
Moron Entertainment continues. And coming soon, a Moron Spectacular yet to be announced. This is so fancy and so quiet and so secret, Dean doesn't even know.
I don't have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. No, and you only know when I tell you.
I'm on a need-to-know basis.
All right, so what's the Channing Tatum situation?
So Channing Tatum posted a picture on Instagram after he lost a bet to his current girlfriend.
Okay.
They were playing the game of Jenga.
Jenga. Yeah.
He lost, and the loser had to post a picture that the winner of the game got to pick. So his girlfriend, singer Jessie J, got to pick any picture that she wanted that he had to post on his.
And what was the picture?
Instagram. It's a picture of him naked in the shower.
Is this like to get some of the attention off the Orlando Bloom kayaking picture where he was naked?
This is Channing Tatum standing in the shower, water careening off of his body.
Was he glistening?
He was glistening.
He's glistening.
He was definitely glistening with his hands strategically placed.
Dean, did you notice he's got a tan line on his thigh? Like that he was wearing really small, almost, like his tan line is...
Speedo?
Yeah, but not the tiny, tiny Speedo, like the little square Speedo, like where it just goes...
Oh, right tighty whities.
Type of the thigh. Yeah,
he probably had tighty whities on.
But outside... I mean, it's a tan line. It's a definite tan line.
Here's the thing. If Channing Tatum was a fat guy in the shower, it'd be an embarrassing photo. This is not an embarrassing photo.
No.
This is a photo of a guy who's one of the sexiest guys alive, I've been told.
Thank you.
Blah, blah, blah. And he's in the shower.
Yeah.
So Is he a good dude? I've never met him.
Very good dude. Very good. Very funny, very self-effacing. He makes fun of himself all the time.
Is he naked when you interview him? Is that part of his deal?
I've never interviewed him naked, but okay. I am going to ask next time. Just to show you how popular, in the first half hour that this was on Instagram, it got 600,000 likes. As of this morning, 2.8 million likes.
Whatever happened to Facebook was going to put up don't like or hates or something. Or I guess you don't need to do that because you just go to the comment section.
Yeah. Who wouldn't like this, though?
Yeah, come on.
Please. I would like him to also post a pullback photo of that actual shower because it looks like an interesting kind of shower.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure that's what you're interested in, the shower.
No, I am, but there's like a black post. And
she loves the plumbing.
I do.
She's a big fan of plumbing. That's
all right, so there's a young Kanye movie coming up?
Yes, just what we've all been waiting for.
I'm on the edge of my seat.
There is going to be a movie which will deal with, so I guess we learn how Kanye got to be the way that he is.
So they show the normal years before he lost it?
I'm not really sure there were any of those.
Yeah, probably.
But he will be played. It's going to actually be a Showtime series. Will be played by Jaden Smith. Oh. Will Smith and Jada Pinkett Smith's son.
Jussie Smollett was going to get that role, but he was busy being beaten up by pretend friends. Two, three,
and he's an adult. That's what I'm thinking. 40 years old.
What's the Christian Bale story?
Christian Bale was in Chicago yesterday. This dude is one of the nicest guys that there can be.
That's good to hear, because when he yelled at people on that movie set, obviously a bad day at work, everybody thought he wasn't.
We've all had bad days at work.
Not me.
We've all had bad days at work. He was in town yesterday because he is so dedicated to the cause of foster children. And he works with an organization in Chicago and actually all over the country called SOS Children's Villages. And they have outposts throughout the United States in which they work to keep brothers and sisters in the same foster family.
Wow, that's really important.
It's
that's good.
Fantastic organization. And Christian has done a lot of work with SOS. Yesterday, he was at CineSpace Chicago, the movie studio where they filmed so many of the Chicago shows. Before the event, I sat down and talked to him. He just loves coming to Chicago because he's got so many great memories of making, a few Batman movies here.
Very good memories of Chicago, like I said, with my daughter, and then the good times on the various films that we've shot here. And my wife was born in Chicago.
I still cannot look up to what is now called Willis Tower, Sears Tower, and right. Not see you standing on.
I do too. I saw that. It looked gorgeous this morning. I was driving in 6 a.m.
Yeah,
the clouds and just peeking through.
Yeah,
and I was like, I've stood up there. I've been right on that corner.
That's where I was.
Yeah.
You were just speaking about foster care and SOS and how it's more meaningful for you. Explain what you mean by that.
There's so much need in the world, of course, for care and love, and so many wonderful issues and charities that need to be dealt with. They're important. But it can become very overwhelming and confusing as to choose, who do I want to help, you know? And you can't spread yourself too thin, or else you end up helping nobody, really. But to me, one of the absolute most fundamental core identities of being human is care for children and elderly, care for children and families.
You gotta love this guy.
He's pretty great.
Not like a lot of celebrities, they just lend their name and don't know anything about the cause or the charities. Christian is very, very involved in this. He is a great guy.
His wife is C.B. Blazic. S-I-B-I. Last name is B-L-A-Z-I-C. She's from here, huh?
Yep.
Okay. Well, she's delightful. And
I don't have her address or anything, if that's what you're asking.
We're going to give that up before the end of the show. It's absolutely fantastic to hear his regular voice, because he just sounds like a street guy from England.
Right.
And to think what he did, for instance, most recently in Veep. Are you kidding me? The guy's unbelievable.
He was, speaking of Veep, he was in town with Adam McKay. He told Adam McKay about SOS Children's Villages, who directed the movie, and Vice, actually. And he came in with...
That's true. Veep is the other one.
Veep is Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Yeah. Adam McKay also came in last night, and he is also supporting the charity as well.
Oh, that's great. That's great. And finally, Billboard Music Awards. Paula Abdul.
Christian is from Wales, by the way, just to avoid...
Well, that's part of London, is it?
Several thousand emails going, he's not from London, he's from Wales.
He sounded like London-ish to me.
Oh, I like, hi, Dean.
Dave.
Dean going,
That's my voice. That's my mean text voice.
You didn't say that right.
Christian Bale's welcome to play the bucket game, by the way.
Or grand prize game.
All right, what's the Paula Abdul thing?
Excuse me.
That's right, cough it up.
She was one of the many performers at the Billboard Music Awards last night. Now, look, she's 56 years old. She looks amazing.
She's smoking hot, man.
She tore it up on stage last night. Take a little listen.
Oh my God, I'm having a disc jockey flashback. Right. I played all of those, man.
She did 1.3
KDWB.
They put the animated DJ Scat Cat. Yeah. Remember that video? Yeah. DJ Scat Cat danced with her last night. And then in that last song, she was thrown around by her dancers. Back and forth, jumps off of like a three-story scaffold into the arms of her dancers, and it was an unbelievable performance. Madonna performed with holograms of herself. The Jonas Brothers performed last night. After the Billboard Music Awards last night, Joe Jonas got married to Sophie Turner from Game of Thrones.
Wow!
They went to a Las Vegas Elvis wedding chapel.
Yep.
And they got married.
Look at you with all your breaking news. Do you know the Paula Abdul story from Toronto with me?
No.
Paula Abdul at the height of her popularity. Interviewed her backstage. She was very nice. I'm sitting front row. There was a song back then was called Will You Marry Me? I think it was a minor hit. Mm-hmm. She sang it while she sat on my lap. She came off stage and sat on my lap in the front row.
Oh, my.
And this is what I did. Giggled and turned red.
And then people accuse you of trying to steal her the attention.
Yeah, just like Taylor. All right, so what's Taylor Swift?
Steve smelled her hair. And this is just for, this is totally for Sandberg. Opening the Billboard Music Awards last night, T Swift. Promise that you'll never find another like me. She put on a heck of a performance. It was like a Cirque du Soleil performance.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And she was joined in the song by Brendan Urie. Do you know from Panic at the Disco?
I do.
He is one of my favorite singers.
Yeah.
He sang several times last night, but performed with Taylor Swift last night. Big winner last night was Drake. He won 12 Billboard Music Awards last night.
I like his snack cakes. I'm not a big fan of the music. There's a point in the video where... Paula Abdul throws her hat, and she hits
somebody in the boots.
Juliana Huff in the neck.
Yeah,
and Juliana Huff tweeted out a picture in the last few minutes of her in a neck brace.
So, did she really?
Yeah, check
That's
it out.
Hilarious.
Check it out. All right, man. Thanks.
Bye.
Back with your news in just a moment on 720 WGN.
Welcome to the third race at the Honeymoon is Over Downs. They're at the gate, and they're off. Jumping out in the lead is Romance and Affection, with Domestic Bliss in close behind. It's Romance and Affection and Domestic Bliss. Here comes Marriage Vows, followed by Immediate Child. Romance and Affection falling off quickly. Mortgaged up the... overtaking Domestic Bliss. And here comes Nasty Attitude, followed by More Children and Drinking Heavily. Coming down the backstretch, Drinking Heavily moving out in front of Mortgaged Up the... But coming on strong on the outside is Credit in Shambles. It's Credit in Shambles, followed by I Don't Give a... Nasty Attitude and Up Yours Keep. Up Yours Keep challenging for second, going into the clubhouse turn. Passing on the rail is I Don't Give a... taking the lead, followed by the house. You cook like and your brother. Here they come spinning out of the turn. I don't give a still in front. Up yours, keep challenging for the lead. Up yours, keep, and I don't give a shit, neck and neck. And down the stretch they come. Up yours, keep is pulling away from I don't give a shit. Coming on strong is I am out of here, and passing the pack is the f***ing house. And at the wire, it's up yours, keep the f***ing house. I don't give a shit, and I am out of here.
I had a box and one there that really paid off nicely. That was the Derby, I think, a few years ago. I don't remember that from recent time, but boy. The truth to be told. That's all I'm saying. The truth stakes. That's what that was.
Yeah, where'd you get that?
Oh, I can't tell you. Howard Sudbury's here, and Howard has done fine work for years in this town and enjoyed the past many at Arlington Park, working for the great Dutchesswath family, and our best to Mr. D, as always.
He is doing wonderfully. We were just talking about him a minute ago. He's 97 years young, and he's going strong, so he's doing something right.
We'll ask you about the race in a second. Tell us what's going to happen Saturday first at Arlington.
Saturday, we've got a hat contest, so everybody wear their best, their bow ties. I'm going to wear a bow tie Saturday. Well, I'm going to try to, but I don't know how to tie one.
Yeah.
You can look it up on YouTube. One?
I know. Yeah. I did. Yeah. And
you still don't know.
Couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I'm not that smart, Mary. So that's why I did sports. All apologies
easy.
To Dave.
Easy. Thanks.
Well, we just read ball scores. I mean, what?
Yeah it's right. There's to it. There's nothing to it.
You move from that into picking horses.
There's nothing to it.
We've got a hat contest. We've got mint juleps. We've got Derby Party Zone. We've got a live band. We've got all kinds of festivities going on all day.
It's a huge day.
It's a huge day, and then we have live races all the way going up to the Derby, which goes off at about 5:45, 5:50.
This is like Daytona. You almost start off with your Super Bowl.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, you know, the Kentucky Derby is the race in the world. It's the one that people remember. They remember the Triple Crown if there's a horse that's going for the Triple Crown, but they get, you know, the Preakness and the Belmont get diminished a little bit if a horse isn't alive for the Triple Crown. But Derby Day, everybody kind of becomes a horse racing fan, I think.
Let's talk about the race in particular, Dave Bennett. Who do you have?
Who do I have? Yeah. Well, you know, I listened to Edzo this morning touting Roadster, but with Omaha Beach out now, it's pretty wide open. There's a horse that I like, Howard, that at least to maybe put him in somewhere, that would be win.
Oh, you're on to my long shot.
Long shot.
I wouldn't be surprised if win, won. Because his problem is he had a little trouble in his last race. He was bumped coming out of the gate, but he closes every time. So I think that he could pick up the pieces and get in there. But you're talking about the race being wide open. I thought it was wide open even with Omaha Beach. And
right.
I don't think he was in any kind of a cinch. It changes the race. It takes one of the favorites out of it. But, you know, I heard Eddie earlier, too. Bob Baffert has won 5 Kentucky Derbies, the trainer.
It's crazy.
He's got 3 in here. Any of the 3 could win, and I like one of the 3. I like Improbable.
I like Improbable. I brought that up earlier. I look smarter. It turns out I'm smarter than I look.
Well, it doesn't mean you're going to be right. So
what?
It doesn't mean you're going to be right.
You almost said you look smarter than you are.
Yeah, I know. And I caught myself mid-thing.
You didn't catch quick enough.
Tell people how you get into the Derby. How do these horses make it to the Derby?
Well, there's a point system now called the Road to the Derby, and it starts when they're 2 years old. So they run in these races, and when they run first, second, third, sometimes first, second, third, and fourth, they accumulate points. And then it's the top 20 point getters that get into it. And that way they think it's, and it has worked out very well, where you wind up with the best 20 that end up getting into it.
And there are years where you might have 15, not 20 horses, or less than 20. Is that because a horse has an issue?
Well, not anymore. I mean, it's been a full gate, I think, for quite a few years now. You might have
because the only
really
time you get a scratch then is a health thing for the horse late.
Yeah, if you have a really late scratch, like in the morning of, they don't stick one in. You might have 19 at that point, but it's still a full gate.
But there's not a horse waiting right now to go into the Omaha Beach slot. It's too late for that?
Well, they already got one, right?
Yeah,
they do.
He's in. It was in time. So he'll be number 20.
But then they move. He starts on the outside, and then they move all the horses one.
They
one,
move them up
closer
a notch,
to the
rail. Closer to the rail, yes. Yeah. And the rail in the Derby is not the greatest place to be because the one hole. the one post position, they kind of started at an angle, so you kind of have a disadvantage when you're coming out of them.
You get pinched?
They either got to use their speed up, and that might hurt them, or they got to take back. They can get buried by, you know, 15 horses on the outside of them. So that's what's fascinating about the Derby with so many horses. The turns are tight, and you have to have a good path to get through this pack. That's why a horse with, like, tactical speed that can get out there and lay, you know, fifth or sixth and can be in the clear, and then they don't
crank
have to, they don't have to wind their way through so many horses. But there have been horses like Mind That Bird in 2009 that came from dead last. He was so far last the first time they went under the wire, it was unbelievable. You didn't think he was going to pass a horse. And he came up the rail, and he wins at 50-1.
So, and that's the last 50-1, I think, they came in, right?
Yeah, there's been a roll now, I don't know how many years in a row, of the favorites winning.
Right.
And that's why I don't pay a lot of attention to the history, because it doesn't matter what happened.
Different every year.
For a while, they were saying, oh, the favorite can't win the Derby, win the Derby, because there hadn't been a favorite in a while. Now the favorite's winning every year. So
The Mutters are going to have a better day on Saturday, in theory. How do we know which horses are the Mutters? Because it's supposed to rain in Louisville, is my point.
Well, the quickest way to find out is see the ones that have run in the mud. And then you'll look back at that. The Arkansas Derby last time out, Omaha Beach was in that, Improbable was in it. So they like it. But I just caution people when they're handicapping it. If a horse hasn't run on slop or mud before, it doesn't mean they can't. I mean, they may love it. They might run better on it than they did on a dry track. So that's just another thing you have to throw into your...
Don't you have horses that are like, you know, some people don't like to be out in the rain. Aren't there some horses that just go, I don't need this?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. And you know, a horse that absolutely hates it, you've got, say they're laying like 15th or 16th, and they're getting slop kicked in their face, and they can't see, and their jockeys can't see, and, you know, they might just throw their tail up in the air and say, that's it. Yeah. I don't like it. I'm not going to run.
Right. Is it more dangerous?
No, not really. Okay. A lot of times on sloppy tracks, horses run faster than they do on dry tracks. So, nah, they don't have any trouble handling.
So there's no traction issues?
No, not at all.
Again, you like who?
I like Improbable the best. Improbable is one of the three Bob Baffert horses. Baffert has won five Kentucky Derbies, which is unbelievable.
And Dave, are you still sticking with your pick from earlier?
I'm going to have him in there somewhere, but I kind of like what Howard's saying about Improbable.
I might have to go with Cutting Humor. And
that makes sense.
Cutting Humor, right?
It just seems like Baffert has figured this out. You know, he can't go wrong taking one of his three.
Well, I mean, yeah, he's figured it out, and he's an excellent horseman, obviously. He's an excellent trainer, and he knows how to get him ready to run in the Derby. But, you know, he has million-dollar yearlings every year. You know, I mean, when you get handed, you know, 10, 12, I don't know how many, gets 20, you know, million-dollar horses, you know, you ought to do some good with them. So, I mean, he has the best of the best.
Is he still involved in the day-to-day? Because I think when you get to a certain level of success, you can have a ghostwriter. Is there the equivalent of a ghostwriter in horse training?
Well, you have to be involved in the day-to-day to a certain extent. But when you have as many horses as some of these guys do, when they've got 50, 60, 80, I don't know how many horses he's got, you cannot, you know, be in there in the stall looking at every one of them. So you have to have a top assistant trainer, which he does. You have to have somebody else you can trust that takes
to picture him in his $5,000 suit in the stables.
Yeah, on his hands and knees, changing bandages.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
No, exactly.
It's a great Howard Sudbury. Remind us again, we need to be at Arlington Saturday. We need to be at Arlington every weekend, but we need to be at Arlington Saturday for the hat contest and what else?
The hat contest. You've got to have a mint julep. And you know what? This might be my last invitation onto the show. You know why?
Oh, you forgot the mint juleps.
I forgot the mint juleps.
We didn't notice.
Dave gets cranky when he can't drink in the morning, but the rest of us are fine.
Yeah, Dave answered the door when I walked in the studio. He's shaking. Yeah.
right. And he's trying to convince us it's chilly in here.
I'll come back and talk about the million if the invitation exists, and I'll I'll bring some kind of a jug for you at that point, and we'll see if we can.
When's that? August?
It's August 10th this year.
Dave, I'll buy you something in between. Don't worry.
Yeah, before your next sportscast, we'll get you through this.
Website at Arlington.
ArlingtonPark.com.
Have a great season.
All right, thanks a lot.
Good to see you, buddy.
All right,
CLTV has joined us, and we'll come back with the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. That's where Steve is next.
But equipment like this in the home of the future, we may not have to go to work.
Now, from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
In the 21st century, it may be that no home will be complete without a computerized communications console.
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Hey, that's you. How was you right there on the radio? How was you on the radio?
That's me.
Anna DeVlantis is here, most famously known as Mother of Gabrielle.
That's right. That's my mom.
How's she doing?
She's awesome. She was just telling Dave Ennett here, we were discussing children in the break, and we were doing our little morning walk with the dog this morning, and she said that I have 21 more days, and then I can be called a second grader.
Oh.
Cannot wait. And the other observation she had that I think is pretty astute is that, why is it that all kids want to be older and be adults, and why is it all adults want to be kids and be younger?
She said that?
She said that, and I want to write that down.
That's great.
I don't know, but that's true.
That's absolutely true.
I am keeping a running list, because I wish I'd done this with Ross and Amy, and it's a smart thing for you to do it, a running list of stuff that Abigail says.
I love it.
Because you'll forget it.
Little Abigail Grace.
You know, you'll just forget it.
I love that she calls you Pops. That's my favorite.
Well, you know me. I'm a black entertainer.
You are.
So,
and you're a pop star in your own right.
That's exactly right. I got some sound to play from you from yesterday. Did you, prior to the Rokan show in the afternoon there with you, did you watch any of the bar thing?
I did. And then this morning, he was supposed to show up, but there's an empty chair there for the House. But I did watch the Senate, some of the testimony
great,
there.
Isn't it great that the Attorney General didn't want to show up for a subpoena?
I think there's a lot of politics going on with this, Steve. A lot of politics.
I'll tell you, it was impressive. I thought yesterday was Chris Coons and Kamala Harris. Mm-hmm. And everybody says Dianne Feinstein is too old and has to go home. I thought she was impressive as well. Anyway, Mr. Barr has taken the opportunity to blow a pretty good reputation in a matter of just a few weeks here. Here's Chris Coons asking him a question, and, well, you'll see.
Going forward, what if a foreign adversary, let's now say North Korea, offers a presidential candidate dirt on a competitor in 2020? Do you agree with me the campaign should immediately contact the FBI? If a foreign intelligence service, a representative of a foreign government says, we have dirt on your opponent, should they say, I love it, let's meet, or should they contact the FBI?
If a foreign intelligence service does, yes.
That is not a wait and see ponderate question. That's an automatic.
That's a no. That's a surefire.
You don't take the meeting, and of course they should contact the FBI.
Yes, of course they should.
You'll see a pattern developed yesterday. Whenever there was a question he was uncomfortable about or hadn't developed the lie quickly enough, he paused.
He paused, and then a couple times referred to someone behind him, just to
who was that? By the way,
must have been someone with his office. I mean, I'm
counsel?
Not quite sure.
But and here's the other thing: I don't always agree with the Senator Coons and his politics, but as a fellow bald man, I see him at the meetings, so that's why I do pay attention to what he says.
Yeah,
Dianne Feinstein, the senior senator from California. Check this question out and listen to the answer. Here's Barr again.
You still have a situation where a president essentially tries to change the lawyer's account in order to prevent further criticism of himself.
Well, that's not a crime.
So you can, in this situation, instruct someone to lie?
No, it has to be. Well, to be obstruction of justice, the lie has to be tied to impairing the evidence in a particular proceeding. McGahn had already given his evidence, and I think it would be plausible that the purpose of McGahn memorializing what the president was asking was to make the record that the president never directed him to fire. And there is a distinction between saying to someone, go fire him, go fire Mueller, and saying, have him removed based on conflict.
There's no distinction. Let me tell you something. I've been removed based on conflict in my career about seven or eight times.
A lot of verbal calisthenics going on there.
It all depends on what the definition of BS is. And you know, I thought was really impressive was Kamala Harris, because she's sort of been lagging in fundraising for the Democratic nomination for president. She's a former prosecutor, sure. So it makes sense that she knows how to ask questions.
It shows.
So much, I thought Durbin did a nice job, but so much of that yesterday, Republicans and Democrats, they're just blowhards. These congressional hearings, they just meander and they yap and almost leave no time for an answer.
Well, you also have, don't forget, William Barr is no stranger to these proceedings. Yeah. He's hard to get to the answer if he doesn't want to give it.
Well, that's why I'm so weak when he would just pause.
Yeah.
Just pause.
Pause on things that are automatic. Yes, of course, when a foreign adversary comes to you.
But it's such a tell. I'm about to lie now. Here's Kamala Harris with Barr yesterday.
Has the president or anyone at the White House ever asked or suggested that you open an investigation of anyone?
I wouldn't.
Yes or no?
Could you repeat that question?
I will repeat it. Yeah. Has the president or anyone at the White House ever asked or suggested that you open an investigation of anyone? Yes or no, please, sir.
The president or anybody else.
Seems you would remember something like that and be able to tell us.
Yeah, but I'm trying to grapple with the word suggest. I mean, there have been discussions of matters out there that they have not asked me to open an investigation, but...
Perhaps they've suggested?
I don't know. I wouldn't say suggest.
Hinted?
I don't know.
Inferred? You don't know. Okay.
So good.
Seemed like the simplest of questions.
This
right?
would be like if I said, and I know you're going out for lunch, uh-huh. I'm considering a sandwich. Uh-huh. Would you like a sandwich? Well, I don't know. I'm thinking
well,
about
are you suggesting a sandwich?
Or I'm struggling.
A sandwich? Do you think you're saying that you might need a sandwich?
I'm struggling with the word sandwich.
Why do you think I need a sandwich?
So idiotic.
Well,
you big fat liar.
That one should be another one easily answerable.
It doesn't. You don't have to struggle with anything.
No.
You know, it's like I told Newt Gingrich an hour ago. Just tell the friggin' truth.
Right. It starts to look as if you're grappling with things that are very easy to answer like that, it starts casting some shadows on your testimony. And that's the what he doesn't need. And he's a smart man. He should be able to answer these questions.
He's supposed to be the guy you can count on to tell the truth. By the way, Chuck Todd was on earlier this morning, and we have two different views of how the president might be handling this. I picture the president sitting at the end of his bed alone in the private quarters and just going, I can't believe people are buying my crap. I can't believe I continue to get away with this.
Like it's all working.
He, on the other hand, sees him as going, well, of course they believe me.
More of sort of an evil genius kind of thing. Yeah. The things are going well for the president, no doubt. I mean, that Mueller report, the story he's been telling, it allows him to continue to tell that story.
Right.
And Democrats run the risk here of looking like they're going after him too much at some point. And I think that's the danger, is that you just look like you're after him. And at some point, need to figure out what you stand for and deliver that message to voters as well. And I have no doubt that some of these Democrats who are running for office will be able to do that and communicate that message effectively. It just right now, it feels that it isn't about that.
I wish people would read the report. I know it's a lot. It's 450 pages. But I wish people would read the report, because when you read it, you get a sense of what actually happened, which is why Mueller wrote the letters to Barr and why this continues to be an ongoing case. The president was not exonerated. And if a win is now redefined as, you're not charging me? Well, then I'm right. I don't know how that's a win. We're talking about the president of the United States. And if that guy or that woman in that circumstance ran any company in America, the board would fire you immediately.
There are a number of facts and a lot of detail there that tell a story. It's a full narrative of what was happening.
You got to read it.
You do. You do.
And by the way, Lindsey Graham admitted he didn't.
He did.
And Barr clearly didn't in the references he made, that in and of itself, I mean, are you kidding me?
Well, they were giving him a hard time also during the hearing yesterday with the Senate about his summary, and that his 4-page summary allowed the president a 3-week lead to be able to say one story that wasn't necessarily supported by the full body of evidence presented in the Mueller report, the 448 pages.
Now that you say that sort of backs up Chuck's theory that there was some sort of evil genius plan.
So maybe Chuck's right. I like that. Anna DeVonta's here. We always love seeing Anna.
And above all else, that's what's at stake in this election. We can't forget what happened in Charlottesville. Even more important, we have to remember who we are. This is America.
Vice President Biden continues to lead amongst the Democrats in polling and also fundraising early on. Now, I'm going to ask my friend Mark Doyle a question about this, and I understand it's hard to separate because you love him like a dad and he loves you like a son. You've basically been part of the family for a generation. Yep. Having said that, you're also one of the smartest political minds I know. Is he tanned, rested, and he's a good-looking cuss, as you know. Is he tanned, rested, and ready? Can he put up with this? Can he handle this? And is he the right guy? Because the Democrats need to find the right guy.
Short answer, yes. He is tanned. He is quasi-rested because nobody rests when you're in a campaign like this. And he is ready because he meets the threshold test above and beyond being able to beat Donald Trump, which has become really the mantra for Democrats across a broad spectrum. But as I explained to somebody the other day, if break it down into any sort of bucket you want on legislative issues, Bernie Sanders is as close as one to him. Bernie Sanders, this is not an indictment, this is an observation. He has passed three bills his lifetime in the Senate.
Yeah, he was a backbencher.
Two were to rename post office, and one was a veteran bill, which was good. Biden's authored and passed 42 pieces of legislation as a U.S. senator. So as it comes,
and by the way, for people to understand that, that means you had the conception, you nursed it, you saw it through, you staffed it through, you fought it through various committees to finally get it. It's a long process.
It's a very long
process. It's like making 42 movies.
It is, because you have to go to the House side, which might be Republican,
right,
then back to conference, and the sausage making is ugly. But the point is, if you look at it from a legislative standpoint, nobody knows how to pass bipartisan legislation better than this guy.
And I would also say, correct me if I'm wrong, but because he's worked with both sides previously, regardless of how ugly things are right now, and frankly, I don't remember them ever being uglier, if he's elected, it's a clean slate. He'll work with anybody.
To be sure, when he was the vice president, at one point, Mitch McConnell, who clearly had issues over the years with Biden.
I got issues with Mitch McConnell.
Called the White House and said during one of the negotiations, a protracted negotiation, said, don't send anybody down but Vice President Biden. He's the only guy I'll talk to. And look at the relationship between him and John McCain.
Yeah.
And Lindsey Graham. And the list goes on and on. And so,
which Lindsey Graham? Because they change
the
often.
The old Lindsey Graham. The old one. Sure.
Got it.
Okay. Again, remember the Titanic joke.
God, we miss McCain, don't we?
Whew. Yeah, there's none of those. There are very few of those Republicans left for some reason, right?
Yeah, the party's unrecognizable.
And so, by any measure, you look at this field, whether it comes to gravitas, whether it comes to understanding how legislation's passed, and whether it comes to understanding what average, regular Americans do in their life that gives them angst, this guy can check those boxes.
He's lived it.
Yeah.
It's an unfair question to ask with the time you may have to answer it, because it's quick. Every family has dysfunction. Every family has trauma. Few families have seen the kind of trauma that Vice President Biden has seen. In addition to that, his surviving son has had some well-documented issues. Those issues have spilled over into a very personal family issue involving his brother's widow. That's not really cleared up yet. My concern is, because of the vice president's dedication to family, he will have trouble reacting to the fact that Trump will bring this up. He'll bring it up, this very personal family issue, and he'll throw it in Vice President Biden's face.
And my view,
outside of reaching over and punching Trump in the face, yeah, which personally I'd be for, but outside of that, how would he handle it?
I'm hopeful he does the following, that he says that he doesn't run from it, because you can't run from it. It's going to be on the front page. I heard last night through the grapevine that Trump and Giuliani were peddling a story to the New York Times about Hunter, to be determined whether or not they run it. It's something that's been in the market before. It's already old news.
Mm-hmm.
What I hope he does is go to the podium one day and said, I want to talk to you about how hard it is sometimes to hold a family together.
Right.
And everybody out there listening, almost all of you are going to have somebody in your family who struggled, and you had to continue to love them. And you doesn't mean you agree with everything they did. this is a personal thing for me, but I'm happy to share it with the American people because you all have these same struggles.
Amen.
And that's how we're going to get through
it. Perfect answer.
And I'm not running from it.
Perfect answer.
And I think it backfires on them if they try and go solo, like subterranean on this guy with this stuff.
What if he just punches him? No?
Can't I'm do for that. I am okay. Actually right. For that.
Game? What's a game? Oh, a game.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
All right, one of the best people I know, that's Ana de Volantes, who's nice enough to come in here and hang with us occasionally, and she did today.
Good to hang out with you guys.
Are you getting tired of the rain yet?
I totally am. But the only nice part about it is because of the deep tunnel being full, they said you really shouldn't do your dishes or laundry.
Ah, good point.
So, yeah. Skipping that for a few days.
13 or 32 billion gallons of water? I forget what the number was. But to think that's full.
I know it.
That's a Bruce Willis movie.
It's like, this isn't supposed to happen.
The water's got to go somewhere. You and Ro, you talk to Tom Skilling every afternoon. Can't you fix this? This is the second straight April we've been screwed out of a month.
He's the weather god, as we know. Yeah. So we'll pray to him today and see what he can do for us.
I went by the house the other day to check on him, and he had his wizard hat on, and he was just working the weather machine. People think he doesn't control it. Ana de Volantes, say hi to our friends here in studio, who are also friends of Mark Doyle, Bobby Wise, Jacob Toops, and a name you might remember, John Janata, Chicago Bears, and the Fighting Illini. Nice to see all you guys. How are you?
Doing great.
Good. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming in. And there's an organization that Mark Doyle asked us to plug, and when we heard about it, it was easy to say yes. And Mark Doyle apparently doesn't like any of you guys because he's no longer in the studio. But it's a very important thing to know about and help support, merging vets and players. So, John, how do you come to this?
Bears actually sent us out an email asking if we'd show up for one of their workouts, and I came that first night, and I was hooked. Been coming ever since when I'm in town and available.
Sure, hard not to be. Bobby, where did you serve?
I was an Army helicopter crew chief. I was a Black Hawk crew chief, so I was a mechanic and door gunner down at Fort Campbell.
Wow, thank you for all that you do. And Jacob, how do you come to this?
Yeah, I'm the executive director, so I bring everything and the magic together.
That's why you're sitting between the player and the vet. Yes. Pull that microphone a little bit closer to you, if you would. All right, so tell people about the organization.
Yeah, so the organization was started a couple years ago by Jake Glazier, who's an NFL insider, and Nate Boyer, who is a Green Beret and was on the Seattle Seahawks. And the mission's simple. They wanted to combine combat veterans and former athletes, both go into high-performance careers and come out losing purpose, identity, and a peer support group. And that's really what we are. We're a peer support group that does some working out, and then we also do what we call the huddle, which is where they talk about transitional challenges and how they can work on these together.
Another friend of ours, Caitlin, is it Ogren? At POW, a gym here in town, has been part of the workout piece of this, right?
Yeah, correct. So her gym actually hosts our program here in Chicago.
We know body and mind need to work together. And once you've left the service, having a way to connect not just with the guys and the women that you served with, but also meeting athletes and that type of thing. It's got to be cool.
Absolutely. One of my favorite parts about serving in the military, I served on a helicopter crew. And so you get into this one aircraft, you put on the headphones and the microphone just like this. Actually, this feels quite at home.
Yeah, no kidding. The only thing missing is the chopper, the rotor. Yeah,
the loud screaming engines.
Yeah.
But you get part of this crew and you learn how to work with one another. You learn each other's thoughts and you help each other through each other's problems, be they professional or personal. And so getting to come back here and, you know, once I've lost the barracks and John lost the clubhouse, being able to rebuild that sense of team is really important, and it's incredibly fulfilling.
Anna, you've worked with military charities forever. Yeah. You have thoughts here?
I imagine the situations like this, you learn from each other, right? I mean, you come from different paths and to where you get, but then when you get together, it's like you're helping each other and you're both taking something away.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
So as you go forward, John is, by the way, 6'7". Have you shrunk at all?
I have. I was told I'm only 6'6".
Okay. Well, you'll be 6'5 by the end of this interview. But outside of doing this, what are you doing now?
I'm a retired firefighter. 30 years, 5 months, 2 weeks. Not that I was counting.
How about that?
So now I'm just exploring other opportunities.
Which firehouse were you in?
I was in Oak Park for 6 years and Berwyn for 24.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, thanks for doing that.
Thanks for doing that.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, how do we help?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing you can do is go to our website, vetsandplayers.org, and donate. So we're always looking to support chapters and reach more folks in our communities. And the second way really is spreading awareness. So our Chicago chapter opened in September. If you are a combat veteran or a former professional athlete, go onto the website and join us. We're every Wednesday at 7:15 at Powell Gym in Chicago.
And thanks again to Caitlin for that. Do you know Jay Glazer? He's Fox still, right?
Correct.
Still Fox?
Yep.
Know the name.
Jay Glazer is this guy. He's about the size Dave Ennett about of a fire hydrant, but he is rock solid.
Yeah.
And he's, I think, Ultimate Fighter, right? Isn't that where the training came from?
Correct, yeah.
So he's a guy that makes sense because of his physical training to tie this all together.
Correct, yeah.
Is it mostly football? You're working with other sports, too?
So we started with with NFL, and we've got NHL folks that have come through, U.S. Olympic athletes as well. You know, we're thinking about a large swath of folks who don't have the support after they come out.
What about sportscasters, Dave? I mean, you know, maybe they want to meet sportscasters.
I don't think they do, really.
Well, you're in, Dave, Anna, you would agree.
Amazing shape.
Dave's in fabulous shape.
For an old guy. Thank you.
No, for any guy.
Absolutely.
I mean,
I'd be out of my class with these guys. I can tell already. Look, you know.
Have you ever tried that ultimate fighting thing?
I have not. No.
Okay.
I'm a lover, not a fighter.
John, are you into kale like Dave? Do you do a lot of kale as a former professional athlete?
I try and eat healthy. I'm not. I won't pass up a good burger or a steak.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about.
I try and eat healthy most of the time.
Protein's important.
I know firemen take better care of themselves than they ever have before, but I think you bring a bunch of kale and quinoa into the firehouse, you're probably going to be leaving soon.
When I first came to Berwyn and I suggested we get a salad, you know, for dinner, they looked at me like I was from another planet. Before I left, sometimes that's all we'd have would be a big, huge salad.
Right. But they don't care of each other.
We do the stair climb for the American Lung Association, the fight for a climb, and the not only are there a lot of them competing, but the firefighters are the best climbers, and they are, I mean, and they're going with full gear too.
What's that pack weigh? Like, you know, when a high rise,
You're looking at probably about 80 pounds for all your turnout gear, your boots, your back, your air pack, helmet,
and how many floors?
45 stories times 4.
Yeah. Yeah, and climbing it with 85 pounds of gear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's very restrictive. If they're wearing full turnout gear, it's restrictive, too. I mean, it's pulling on your legs. And
well, you think about all the years you trained as an athlete, you were probably in better shape as a fireman.
I was for a long time. I mean, age took its toll and the beating I took playing sports.
Sure.
You know, yeah.
It's impressive.
I mean, the guys now, though, that are coming on the job and working the job now, I mean, they run marathons and do the Ironman competitions. Right. I mean, it's a different department than when I was working, when I first came on board.
Merging Vets and Players. One more time on the website?
Yeah, VETSANDPLAYERS. So vetsandplayers.org.
And from the vet side of this, Bobby, last word goes to you. What would you say to vets who want to get involved?
Come on out and get back on the team. That's the biggest thing you lose, like for athletes or vets. Just have that support around you to bounce ideas off of and tell you when you're doing right and give you a kick in the butt when you're doing wrong.
Well, it's also good to be able to sit down with guys who've walked your walk, right?
Totally.
Yeah. Merging Vets and Players. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here. We'll come back in just a moment.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
It's 9:56. All right, Anna, I don't want to put any pressure on you and Roe, but here's what we had on the Steve Cochran Show today. We had Chuck Todd. We had Eddie Olchek. Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot. Pat Brady. Newt Gingrich. And I think you know how close Newt and I are.
I heard. I could hear in your voice.
Dean Richards. Howard Sudbury.
Oh, my gosh.
Obviously, these three fine gentlemen who are just here. And you, all on the show today. In other words, beat that,
Ryan bro. Dempster. We've got the kids, Lauren Lapka and Kevin Powell are out at White Sox. At Cork and Carry, sampling vodka from a Chicago vodka distributor maker.
Does that seem wise?
I'm a little concerned. First of all, he's also doing the sports while he's drinking vodka. Now, I don't even do that.
So by 5:20 or 5:30 or so, you're going to hear, "You never love me, Ro."
Which one's the White Sox? Which one's the Red Sox?
Yeah, exactly. All right, so that's a big show. Nothing wrong with that.
It's a good show.
I mean, it's not this show, but it's pretty good.
I like how competitive you get.
It sounds like a great show.
Thank you, Dave. Well, it you have great. To listen. Great.
It's always better with you on it.
Thank you.
Nice to see you.
Nice to be here.
Thanks for being here. All right, one more break. We'll come back. Add a Bill and Wendy in a moment on 720 WGN. Woo! Busy show today. I'm tired. Some days I'm here till 10:30. I'm out of here by 10:04 today.
We have something to brighten your day. We have a present for you.
Yeah, a present, Steve.
You got a present?
Yeah,
I like
present.
I'm like Abigail Grace. I like presents.
All right.
All right. Rick Rand was here yesterday, and he was talking about the World's Fair Memorabilia Show, which is going on Elk Grove Holiday Inn this Sunday.
Yeah.
Go to worldsfairshow.com.
Uh-huh.
And he brought something just for you.
He did?
Yes. You were talking about being named after an actor.
Yeah, Steve Cochran.
This is a poster featuring Steve Cochran.
Come on.
Wow.
Isn't this the guy that my mom had the crush on.
And look at the likeness, Steve. It looks exactly like you.
And that's why she named me after Steve Cochran. She had a crazy crush on Steve Cochran. Now, here's an even better part of the story. Steve Cochran died at about age 50 on a boat off Catalina with three hookers.
Oh.
Didn't he have a ton of girlfriends?
The similarities continue.
Yeah.
Look at the quote, Steve Cochran's unusual legacy. Isn't that fantastic?
This
he found
tremendous.
This and brought it in just for you.
Ah, that's really nice.
And more fun things at worldsfairshow.com happening Sunday in Elk Grove Village.
Yeah, and look, same hair.
Yeah, same exact hair.
Yeah, yeah.
Same sturdy eyebrows.
Anna, you don't look like you're seeing it.
No, I'm not seeing the resemblance.
Oh.
He has dark hair and a lot of it.
Wait a second.
That's different.
So, and it may have been five hookers. There was at least three hookers on the boat.
Oh, really?
And they were alive.
Yeah.
But Steve Cochran was dead.
He passed away.
So my mother told me that later in life. I went, which part of that's the good part of the story on why you named me Steve?
It's a good role model for you.
Not a bad way to go.
To top that.
Enjoy the program because it's Bill and Wendy right now. See you tomorrow.